Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. New York, this is Democracy Now! Students at Columbia University occupy Hamilton Hall and rename it Hind Hall after the six-year-old Palestinian girl Hind Rajab, killed by Israeli soldiers in Gaza. Other Columbia students face suspension as they continue their Gaza solidarity encampment. As police crack down on student protesters around the country, Democracy Now! Went to Columbia to speak to professors and students.
Hundreds of our students have been disciplined over the past 6 months on unfair premises. We're willing to put a lot on the line for this cause. My right to education shouldn't come before the right to education of Gazans.
We'll also speak with genocide scholar, Brown University professor Omer Bartoff, about allegations of anti-Semitism by protesters and the weaponizing language. He was at the UPenn encampment, and an Israeli airstrike in Gaza has killed the oldest daughter and the baby grandson of the prominent Palestinian poet and academic Rafat El-Arir, who himself was killed in an Israeli airstrike in December. We'll speak with the friend of the family, Jihad Abu Salim.
Rafat wrote, "If I must die, you must live to tell my story."
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Students at Columbia University took over Hamilton Hall just after midnight, after the school began suspending students who refused to leave the Gaza Solidarity encampment, which began almost 2 weeks ago. The hall was also the site of an historic student occupation in 1968. Students have renamed the building Hind Hall in honor of Hind Rajab, a six-year-old Palestinian girl killed by the Israeli military in Gaza. Police across the country are continuing to crack down on student protesters calling for an end to Israel's assault on Gaza. In Texas, police made at least 100 arrests Monday at a student-led encampment at the University of Texas, Austin. Earlier this morning, police raided an encampment at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, arresting at least 25 people. In California, officials at California State Polytechnic University, Humboldt, have closed the school's campus for the rest of the semester in an effort to shut down a student occupation. Meanwhile, at the new school here in New York, students have expanded their protests by occupying the lobby of the Parsons School of Design. Students at the Fashion Institute of Technology are continuing their encampment in their school lobby as well. New protest encampments have begun at a number of schools, including the University of Chicago and the University of Oregon. Campus protests against Israel's assault on Gaza have also spread overseas, including Sorbonne University in Paris, where students said they were inspired by the protests at Columbia.
I think that today we have the same concern as elsewhere, as at Columbia, as at Sciences Po, and how it has been happening for 6 months. We're denouncing what we are seeing before our eyes, that is to say the genocide of the Palestinian people, which is being committed by the State of Israel with the active complicity of the French government. Not just the French, of course, but as this is our government, in my opinion, we must denounce it.
Democracy Now! Goes to Columbia University after headlines to speak with students and professors. The student protests comes the death toll in Gaza's top 34,500, including over 14,500 children. U.S. Secretary of State Tony Blinken has arrived in Jordan as negotiations continue over a proposed 40-day ceasefire and a deal to release more hostages held in Gaza. Blinken urged Hamas to accept the current proposal.
Hamas has before it a proposal that is extraordinarily, extraordinarily generous on the part of Israel. And in this moment, the only thing standing between the people of Gaza and a ceasefire is Hamas. They have to decide, and they have to decide quickly.
Senior Hamas official Osama Hamdan criticized Blinken's comment. Hamdan told Al Jazeera, quote, stopping the attacks against Palestinians is not generous. The attack itself is a crime. So when you stop a crime, you can't claim that it's a generous action from the Israeli side, unquote. Hamas officials are reviewing the current proposal. Meanwhile, Israel's continuing to attack Rafah and other parts of Gaza. A Palestinian woman, Umfayaz Abu Taha, spoke to a reporter in Rafah while holding an infant after surviving an Israeli airstrike.
We took her from under the rubble, thank God. She is 2 months old, and thank God. Was she holding a rocket or was she standing near tanks? What's her fault? What would her fault have been if she had been injured or martyred? What would her fault have been? The entire world is seeing what's happening to us. They carry out negotiations and things, but we feel like this is all in vain. It's like they're giving us some anesthetic, not more. They carry out negotiations while Israel strikes. Look at us with some compassion, with some humanity. Fear God. This is all we ask for. We're not asking for much. Just end the war, nothing more.
Politico is reporting a group of lawyers, including 20 that work in the Biden administration, are calling on the president to halt military aid to Israel. In a letter, the attorneys write, quote, the law is clear and aligned with the majority of Americans who believe the U.S. should cease arms shipments to Israel until it stops its military operation in Gaza. The letter also urges the Justice Department to investigate whether war crimes charges could be brought against U.S. citizens serving in the Israeli military. Amnesty International is also calling on President Biden to halt arms sales to Israel. In a new report, Amnesty documents how Israel's used U.S.-supplied weapons to kill Palestinian civilians. The Biden administration's claiming the International Criminal Court has no jurisdiction to charge Israeli officials for war crimes. This comes amidst reports the ICC may be close to issuing arrest warrants for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and other Israeli officials, as well as members of Hamas. State Department spokesperson Vedant Patel spoke Monday.
Since this president has come into office, we have worked to reset our relationship with the ICC, and we are in contact with the court on a range of issues, including in connection to the court's important work on Darfur, on Ukraine, on Sudan as well. But on this investigation, our position is clear. We continue to believe that the ICC does not have jurisdiction over the Palestinian situation.
The United States has long criticized the International Criminal Court, but last year, President Biden ordered U.S. agencies to share evidence with the court after it issued an arrest warrant for Russian President Vladimir Putin after he invaded and occupied parts of Ukraine. On Capitol Hill, a number of lawmakers, both Republican and Democrat, threatened to retaliate against the ICC if it takes action against Israel. Democratic Senator John Fetterman of Pennsylvania said, quote, it would be a fatal blow to the judicial and moral standing of ICC to pursue this path against Israel, he said. A group of more than 50 journalism professors have written to the New York Times calling on the paper to commission an independent review of its report that members of Hamas committed widespread sexual violence October 7th. Numerous media outlets have raised questions about the paper's reporting, which was written in part by a freelance Israeli journalist who had liked multiple posts on social media advocating violence against Palestinians. In news from Ukraine, a Russian missile attack on the city of Odessa has killed five and left at least eight people seriously injured. The missile struck the Odessa Law Academy, which is known locally as the Harry Potter Castle. The United States is warning a large-scale massacre could soon occur in the Sudanese city of El Fasher, the capital of North Darfur. The city's been a key hub for humanitarian groups, but fighting's begun between the Sudanese armed forces and the rapid support forces. The U.S. ambassador to the U.N., Linda Thomas-Greenfield, spoke Monday.
As we speak, the RSF is planning an imminent attack on El Fasher. As I've said before, history is repeating itself in Darfur in the worst possible way. And an attack on El Fasher would be a disaster on top of a disaster. It would put 500,000 internally displaced persons at risk. People traveled from across Darfur to seek refuge. And that's on top of the 2 million Sudanese who call El Fasher home.
The Washington Post has revealed senior members of India's spy agency were directly involved in a foiled plot to kill a prominent Sikh activist who lives here in New York City. The Washington Post reports the assassination plan was signed off by an officer in India's spy agency, the Research and Analysis Wing. The Post also reports U.S. intelligence agencies believe Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi's national security adviser was aware of the assassination plot to kill Gurpatwant Singh Panam, who advocates for an independent state for Sikhs in northern India. Modi's government's denied any involvement, blaming the assassination plot on rogue operatives. An unprecedented heat wave continues to bake large areas of Southeast Asia. Schools have been closed in Bangladesh and parts of the Philippines. The temperature in Burma has reached as high as 118 degrees Fahrenheit. The heat wave is also impacting Cambodia, Thailand, Vietnam, and India. The World Meteorological Organization recently reported the climate crisis impacted Asia more than any other region last year. President Biden's called on Congress again to pass an assault weapons ban after four law enforcement officers, including three U.S. marshals, were shot dead in Charlotte, North Carolina, as they attempted to serve a warrant on a man wanted for firearms possession. Four other officers were wounded in the shootout, which also left the wanted individual dead. Johnny Jennings is the chief of the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department.
About 1:30 p.m. this afternoon, the U.S. Marshals Fugitive Task Force went to the 5,000 block of Galway Avenue in an attempt to serve a warrant on an individual for possession of firearm by a convicted felon. When they approached that individual, they were met with gunfire. Officers returned gunfire and struck the victim, who was later pronounced deceased in the front yard of the residence. As officers approached that individual, they then received additional gunfire from inside of the residence.
And the United Auto Workers and Daimler Truck reached a deal Friday to avert a possible strike at the truck and bus manufacturer in North Carolina. Under the tentative deal, 7,000 workers at Daimler Truck will see their salaries increase by 25% over the next 4 years. This is UAW President Sean Fain.
Time's up for billionaires who think working class people can't stand up for themselves. Time's up for a system of exploitation that destroys lives, that destroys families, and destroys communities. And the clock has run out on corporate greed. Today belongs to the working class.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As police crack down on student protesters around the country, we begin today at Columbia University, where scores of students took over Hamilton Hall just after midnight last night, after the school began suspending students who refused to leave the Gaza Solidarity encampment, which began almost 2 weeks. Columbia's Emergency Management Operations Team says it has now locked down the main campus following the occupation. Hamilton Hall was also the site of a historic student occupation in 1968. students have renamed the building Hinz Hall in honor of Hind Rajab, a six-year-old Palestinian girl killed by the Israeli military in Gaza. Students are calling for Columbia University to divest from Israel. Democracy Now! Was on campus Monday. We spoke to professors and students after a vote around noon to stay in the encampment despite being sanctioned with interim suspension. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! We're on the Columbia University campus. Right behind us is the tent encampment. There are dozens of tents there. And then you see around me are people in orange fluorescent vests. They are the faculty. They are the professors at Columbia University who are here to protect their students. It's just before 2:30 when a news conference will be held. We just passed a 2 p.m. deadline when Columbia President Shafiq said after this point that the students can be suspended. It's not clear whether they will be moving in the police. On Friday, President Shafiq said they would not send in the New York police, but as we were coming up from the subway, there were scores of police, and I now have heard that they're standing there with plastic handcuffs. But these students are determined.
My name is Sloida Palat. I'm a student organizer. I'm a graduate student at Columbia University. I study human rights here. I'm also part of the negotiating team.
And if you could tell us, what is it exactly you're demanding?
Simple. We don't want to trade in the blood of Palestinians, and that means divestment from all direct and indirect holdings that this university has, whether that be weapons manufacturing, companies that operate illegally in occupied territory, companies that produce information technology for the occupation army, complete divestment. We're also requesting disclosure. We don't have transparency on this university's investments, and we need that to be able to push the movement further. We're also requesting amnesty. Hundreds of our students have been disciplined over the past 6 months on unfair premises. We're willing to put a lot on the line for this cause. My right to education shouldn't come before the right to education of Gazans.
My name is Linnea Norton. I'm a PhD student here. I study ecology and climate science. I'm a second year. And I've been part of the initial encampment and was one of the over 100 students who were suspended and arrested, or first arrested and subsequently suspended. We have our doctors in John Jay Hall just there, and my shoulder was injured during the arrest because we were zip tied for like 7 hours straight, and I couldn't go to the doctor, so I had to go to, because I wasn't allowed to enter campus and be on campus property, so I had to go to urgent care.
So you had to pay for that?
Yeah.
My name is Shauna Redmond. I am a professor of English and Comparative Literature and the Center for the Study of Ethnicity and Race. And I'm here today because this is leadership in action. These students have taken the worst of circumstances on a global scale and the worst of circumstances at a very localized university scale and turned it into something beautiful. The encampment here, complete with a library, complete with a de-escalation team, complete with lessons and teach-ins, has modeled for this campus what open and free inquiry and debate actually looks like. As the students say, we keep us safe, and so we as faculty are here to assist in ensuring that that is made true.
I'm Nadia Abulhaj. I'm an anthropologist, a professor of anthropology, and the co-director of the Center for Palestine Studies. The people behind me in the orange vests are mostly faculty, some staff, who have been mobilized since the last police raid, however long ago it was. We've mobilized faculty who would come out and stand sort of both guard but also mostly witness if the police came in again. The president has promised that the police would not come in. That was a promise made 2 days ago. But this morning her email said that the encampment would be cleared after 2 p.m. if the students didn't leave. So we're not quite clear what that means, how they're going to clear the encampment. I mean, the core issue at the in the immediate is, of course, the genocide going on in Gaza. And the kind of depiction of the students as somehow Hamas supporters or anti-Semites and sort of dangerous rabble-rousers is a complete misrepresentation of these students. They've been calm, they've been incredibly well organized, and they're taking a principled stance.
What about the fact that today a Jewish student sued the university saying they don't feel safe on campus?
Under a Jewish currency?
I think that there's a really important distinction between to be made between feeling unsafe and being unsafe. So I would start with that. I am more than willing to engage any student in a conversation about feeling unsafe, and we're hearing a lot of that from Muslim and Palestinian students as well. But I told the Palestinian students I met with about this months ago, I think it's helpful to disentangle. When you say I feel unsafe, what are you feeling? Are you uncomfortable? Are you offended? Are you angered? Or are you actually unsafe? Being doxxed makes you unsafe. Being sprayed by chemicals makes you unsafe. Having the right-wing Christian nationalists on the outside trying to climb fences into Colombia makes people unsafe. But a lot of what is being labeled as unsafe is being made uncomfortable. And if there are specific instances of physical threats and violence against Jewish students, of course they need to be dealt with. But the depiction of campus as a kind of hotbed of anti-Semitism that makes Jewish students unsafe is just not true. And there are lots of Jewish students in the encampment. JVP is a very powerful force on this campus, and they don't think it's an accurate description.
Throughout the negotiations, the Shafi'i Federation treated this movement as a matter of internal student discipline rather than a movement, or rather than as one of the great moral and political questions of this generation.
Anarima Bargava, civil rights lawyer and filmmaker. This is, we're into the third week of the encampment. Obviously, this morning there was a statement by the president very much sort of putting people on alert and trying to give herself the legal foundation that she didn't have when she arrested students the first time. I think in many ways we continue to see a very much an encampment that has been peaceful. There are many, many students who came here when they heard about the fact that there's action that has been promised to be taken today. And so we see a lot of students have come in support of the students who've been part of the encampment for all of these days. And I think this is somewhat of a situation of the university's own creation, right? Because by suggesting that they're going to take action today, there have been a lot more students who've come onto campus. And in many ways, again, this is the last day of classes. This is a time where we're going into study period. And if you can see around you, there's a lot of efforts to get ready for commencement. And so we're at the end of the school year. And in many ways, this request to sort of remove students because of a safety concern, obviously, two weeks ago when this happened, it was, even the chief of police of the New York Police Department was saying that these students were peacefully protesting and they were not resisting arrest and they were peacefully here.
Some of the voices of students, professors, and their supporters at Columbia University, the Gaza Solidarity Encampment Monday, as many students refused to leave even as they faced suspension. Standing outside of Columbia University on the sidewalk, I then spotted civil rights activist Reverend Herbert Daughtry. I asked why he was there.
My name is Herb Daughtry. My church is the House of the Lord Churches. And I'm standing out here today to support the students, the right to protest for what they believe is right. That's our tradition. I've stood on many lines before across the world for Roman Catholics in Northern Ireland, for Jews here, for Palestinians. I just believe that somebody somewhere must be advocating for peace.
Let me ask you, did you know Dr. King, and when were you with him?
Well, Dr. King, yes, let's go back 1958, 59, something like that, particularly on the war in Vietnam, 1967. I was at Riverside Church when he made his famous Why I Opposed the War in Vietnam. And
do you see this as a similar moment where people take a position that even people in King's inner circle said you shouldn't take on the Vietnam War? It's not your war. You are its leader. And he said, no, all of these issues are connected.
And I'm a follower of Dr. King. I believe our efforts are to save the planet, save the people. That's what I believe that I've been called to do. And wherever there are oppression, exploitation, wherever there are people who... Listen, Jesus said, taught us the least of these to struggle for, speak for, work for, the least in society. And so we try to identify where's the pain, where's the misery. And I've been to Sudan, I've been to Israel, I've been to Ireland, you name it, and Saigon. So, you know, I'm 93 now, so been.
So you were here at Riverside Church just down the road from Columbia University on April 4th, 1967, a year to the day before Dr. King was assassinated, when he gave his speech here against the war in Vietnam. What was it like to be in there?
Well, I had taken some young people, and it was an electric moment. Everybody was waiting for it. And when he speaks, of course, he was mesmerizing. And when he speaks, his reasoning was compelling, persuasive for anybody who had even a balanced mind. And it was an electric moment. And, well, it was an unforgettable moment.
Do you see parallels to today?
Yeah, where people are gathered to make these issues, to raise these issues, yes. What impressed me is when people are putting their lives on the line, their conveniences on the line. That impressed me. So when you run across people who are willing to risk something precious, you take note. And so Dr. King was here, I believe he's here, and he was he who said, if we haven't found something to die for, we haven't found something to live for.
That's the legendary civil rights activist, Reverend Herbert Daughtry, at 93. His daughter, Reverend Leah Daughtry, was the CEO of the Democratic National Conventions in 2008 and 2016. As her father proudly said, they were rated the best conventions ever. This is Democracy Now! When we come back, we take a journey 56 years ago to 1968, when Hamilton Hall was occupied. Stay with us.
Coming of age during the plague of Reagan and Bush, watching capitalism gun down democracy. They've had this funny effect on me, I guess. And I'm down at the Blue Cheese. Jesus Blue Cross Hospital. Just looking up from my pillow, feeling blessed.
Your next bold move by Ani DeFranco. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we go back now in history, Columbia University's Hamilton Hall, which students occupied just after midnight last night, we reported earlier, was also the site of a historic student occupation in 1968.